We analyze what happened in the Baltimore Ravens 23-20 loss to the Buffalo Bills in week four of the 2022 season with a very special guest coming up next here on Locked On Ravens.
You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. We're here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you so much for tuning in today, making us your first listen on Locked On Ravens. We're free and available on all platforms, including on YouTube. And we are back here. It is a Taco Tuesday, one coming after a week four loss to Buffalo. Baltimore suffers 23-20. In a game that, look, Baltimore got off to a blazing start. They have a 17-point lead. They lose that 17-point lead. Buffalo is able to come out victorious. Here to talk about just what happened, what went wrong, where the Ravens are right now, and more, it's Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown here with us. And Spencer, I know there was a lot of anticipation heading into that Buffalo game. That fast start really had people feeling good. But then again, the Bills chip away at that lead. They're able to come back. The John Harbaugh decision is one we'll talk about here in a few minutes as well. I mean, how you doing after a game like that?
Doing well. You know, there's instant emotions. People are very upset after the game and fourth down this, that, the other. But when you go back and watch through the game, the Ravens had every opportunity to put the Bills away. The Bills truly did get away with quite a bit of home cooking, despite being the away team, somehow roughing the passer, ineligible man downfield. Josh Allen, you know, just for giggles, gets tackled short of the goal line, and they give it to him anyway, even though he probably gets in. It just really was anything that could go wrong does. Lamar Jackson throws an interception that hits off of a defender's face mask dead square. And then Ian Eagle and the crew were like, what a great play by the defender, when the ball just hit him in the face mask. So this wasn't the Ravens' day. Nothing could go their way. You know, Lamar Jackson, I thought, didn't throw the ball well at all in adverse conditions. Ran the ball really well. Didn't throw the ball well. Rashad Bateman did him no favors, but was definitely timid in terms of throwing the ball, similar to how we've seen him in some other rainy games at times. And the weather did start to become a factor as Justice Hill is starting, even just to even go even further, as Justice Hill's really starting to plug along there, has, I think, three runs of 10 plus yards, two on one drive, pops his hammy as he's running the ball really well and making defenders miss and turning explosive plays out. And all of a sudden you're left on, you know, the 1 yard line. You get all the way down to the 1.5 yard line. You try to run a play. The Bills defensive lineman makes a fantastic play, swims over Morgan Moses, forces Patrick Ricard to hit him. And then Matt Milano is able to go fill, get you in a negative script. You can't go punch the ball in. And on fourth down, you have a receiver wide open. Lamar drifts out of the back of the pocket and throws an interception, which was the worst possible outcome. I think a pick six would have been better than an interception in the end zone there that allows the Bills to milk the clock. They end up getting that roughing the passer call, which was definitely suspect at best. And hey, it was America's game of the week, and feels like the Bills are, you know, hey, maybe they're the new America's team, which used to have a little bit more different, subtle shot calling in it back in the day in our parents' generation. They were called America's team because the refs would walk them down the field, and it felt like, hey, the Ravens did, you know, commit a couple stupid penalties pre-snap and things like that. But it was truly a soup du jour of bad weather and bad calls and mishaps for the Ravens. And at the end of the day, they had the Bills on the ropes, very much so. And that's a team that's the Super Bowl favorite and the MVP favorite. They hold them to two touchdowns and three field goals, keep them out of the end zone twice in the red zone, force two turnovers, and should have won the game. So I think that people are going to be very upset, would have loved to see them hold on. The Dolphins game makes people compound into that. But I think the Ravens are a lot better team than people realize.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're talented. They have talent on all three sides of the ball. And you mentioned the fourth down decision and Lamar Jackson and the weather, Spencer. Those are two points I want to hit on in this first segment. Let's start with the decision. Obviously, a little background. The Ravens are fourth and goal from the Bills' 2 yard line with like just over 4 minutes to go. And instead of kicking a field goal to take the lead in a tie game, it was 20-20. John Harbaugh decides to keep his offense on the field and go for it. And there's been a lot of people who would have taken the field goal. There's been a lot of people who are content with the decision to go for it on fourth down. I mean, what were your initial emotions to seeing the offense back out there? And then as you kind of see the replays and work through it a little bit. Where are you now in terms of what Harbaugh did?
Well, like I already said, I think that the interception was the worst possible outcome and was in part what lost them the game. And the fact that the interception was a touchback, because a major when you run numbers, when you look, everybody hates the A word. When you do math is what analytics are. It's just math. It's just statistics. It's not some crazy, the A word is some way that people put, you know, a pair of glasses on and a top hat and start smoking a tobacco pipe about it. And it sounds like it's some crazy astrophysics, you know, advanced math. It's just statistics, man. It's just, hey, this is what happens the last 10,000 times there's been a similar play. It's basic statistics and probability. And the outlier, the worst result, is not pinning the Bills on the 2 or the 1 yard line and not having that field position where then they have to waste a play to try to get out. Hopefully, you know, you're able to force them into second down, whatever. Maybe the Bills go do win it either way. But in that specific context, I would have wanted to kick the field goal because, like I already mentioned, Justice Hill is hurt. J.K. Dobbins is getting ramped back up and is tired. He looked like he was winded. You know who else looked tired? Lamar Jackson. He looked winded. Rashad Bateman isn't in there. The Ravens offense, once Rashad Bateman suffered a foot injury, completely sputtered out. You don't have that threat. And guess what? Devin Duvernay was wide open. The play call worked. Wide open. Lamar Jackson drifts out of the back of the pocket instead of stepping up into the face of it. And hey, maybe taking off or maybe just throwing to the open receiver on his first read. I think Lamar Jackson royally screwed that one up. Was piss poor execution. And what did Lamar Jackson say? Before you get your pitchforks out for me, I wish I had that one back. We didn't execute on that play. And then you hear Mark Andrews when he's asked about it. What does he have to say? Oh, well, I'm a dog. I want to eat. I want to attack. And I love that Harbaugh does that too. It is what they are. So you'll give them that they do believe in their process. They do have the confidence in what they practice and they preach what they practice. So that's all fine and dandy. I would have kicked a field goal. It's a rainy day and I get it. You are what you are. They don't lie and they don't lie to themselves. They do it no matter what. They want to give the MVP quarterback the ball in his hands. When I looked at that play, what I saw pre-snap was that there was a bunch to the right, and then you motion Mike Davis out. That motion identifies what the coverage is. So that gives Lamar Jackson more context clues. Safety's playing inside shade. Two defenders are up on the tight ends. They're pressing, so you know the safety's going to take the over-top route. Lamar Jackson said he basically couldn't see what was happening. So he didn't really have any anticipation. I think he lacked the anticipation there. But what I thought was going to happen was you motion Mike Davis out, you spread the defense out laterally that way, and then you run a quarterback bash where you pull Daniel Fa'alele and Ben Powers to the other side with Devin Duvernay, who was off the ball. I thought they were going to try to run the football in that situation to laterally. And in that case, you would have had Andrews and likely with Fa'alele and Powers as a four-man tandem to go try and work on the edge and work on that situation. And if Lamar Jackson decides to keep the ball, you have that. If not, then you have Devin Duvernay, world-class sprinter, who has done some nice things with the football in his hands, makes some guys miss from time to time, especially on kickoffs. And maybe he has a one-on-one with a defender trying to catch him and go tail, and you're relying on Mike Davis and I think DeMarcus Robinson to stalk block successfully there. So that's what I thought was about to happen. Instead, they decided to throw the ball. I would love to see in those play calls, take the ball out of Lamar Jackson's hands once. Every single time it is that Lamar has to win the game, has to make the play. I get it. He's the MVP quarterback, but he doesn't have to be the fourth down game winner 100 times out of 100. He can do it 90 out of 100. You can put the ball in his hands. It doesn't have to be 100 out of 100. So play call wise, fine. You know, I think the play was fine considering everything that happened, the call itself. I would have kicked a field goal. I would have loved to kick a field goal. I know many wanted to kick a field goal and put some sort of pressure. John Harbaugh's comments then basically saying that, we think that they would have worked with four downs and gotten it. But if you kick a field goal, they're not going to work with four downs once they're in field goal territory. And then guess what? It's a slippery game. Maybe it's a 47-yard field goal. And Bass is a very good kicker, but hey, maybe the pressure gets to him, maybe misses it. So, you know, it's horseshoes and hand grenades and all sorts of closeness and how close they were. But at the end of the day, this was a really good Bills team, a really good Ravens team. The Bills were very injured, and I think the Ravens should have beaten them. The offense just, like I said, the interception hits off of someone's face. It was bad luck. The fourth down decision, either way, didn't end up making a world of difference what they did, I don't think, in terms of like win probability. But Lamar Jackson couldn't make a play. And hey, it happens, man. That doesn't mean he's don't pay him. And it doesn't mean we have to have an indictment on Lamar Jackson and whether he's worth, you know, is he worth $400 million now or $300 million or not worth any. It's one game. Bills are a good team. Ravens are a good team. I think these teams might see each other again later in the year.
I 100% agree. I personally also would have kicked the field goal. And, you know, people are talking about hindsight, et cetera, just what went into it. But Duvernay was open in the back of the end zone, so you wish the execution was there. But at the end of the day, it was not. But you made a good point earlier, Spencer, about these weather games in Lamar Jackson. We saw it back in 2019 against San Francisco. We've seen a couple other ones where maybe the weather wasn't as bad or there was just a hint of it. But this was a game where the weather, I think, certainly had an impact on both sides. And I think for Jackson, you mentioned that the timidness of him to maybe throw the football, do this and do that. I mean, what'd you see out of him in this game? Because I do think the weather impacted him.
Yeah, I think he was timid. I think he also took a really big shot in his hip. In the open field, I believe in the early third quarter, if I'm not mistaken, a safety did get his helmet and or shoulder pad into Lamar Jackson's hip. I think he looked a little kind of stiff, a little sore after that one, but he was fine. He doesn't have to come out of the game. Probably, you know, stiff walking around today. Michael Vick, I think, ended up all I saw was that Vick said something about a hip and how he realized when he was 30 or 31 that he kind of couldn't keep trying to outrun linebackers, things like that. So, I think I saw him take a shot. I think that he was a great runner still and scrambled when he should have. I think that he, I don't want to say wrong, rightly so, but tried to get the ball out a little quick or leave the pocket a couple times. He had really good protection generally throughout that game. Falele played well enough to give him protection. Ricard blocked, you know, the backs chipped. They did good things and kept the Bills front at bay generally. He did make one really dynamic play to elude a sack and flip the ball to Mark Andrews, who has the assist to Devin Duvernay, which is just a crazy play. But I don't think he played winning football in this one. I think that he got outplayed. But when the refs aren't on your side either, that doesn't help. So I think that that is what gave Josh Allen the edge in this game, not that Josh Allen went and outclassed Lamar Jackson. They played a pretty similar game. I mean, ran around a bunch, scrambled a bunch, ran the ball a lot, failed to really push the ball downfield, failed to do anything in a rainy game. So I think that, you know, should have been a draw and ends up being kind of a weird scorecard from a referee for a boxing euphemism. And I think that Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen played very parallel games in this one.
Yeah. And again, these things happen. Lamar Jackson is going to have a bad game here and there, and that's okay. It's you mentioned
everybody it, does.
Exactly. It's not like Lamar Jackson is all of a sudden bad or we think he's bad or anything, but it happens sometimes. And I think the weather did play a part for both sides. You mentioned the referees too, Spencer. We'll be talking about that in the second segment for sure. We'll dive into the defensive performance as well. So be sure to stay tuned. We still have a ton to talk about here on the show. First, though, I do want to tell you a bit about Athletic Greens, and our next partner is a product that people use literally every day, and they start taking AG1 because they want a better gut health, more energy, an optimized immune system, etc. And what is this stuff? Well, with one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins and minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. All the things you need. It's lifestyle friendly, so whether you eat vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, it can be for you. Also, it costs less than $3 per day, so you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit if you have one. And right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with immediate daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. There are no need for a million different pills or supplements to look out for your health. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to gift you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel patches with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NFL Network. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/NFL Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. We're back here with our second segment of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Allshaker still here with Spencer Schultz breaking down Baltimore's 23-20 loss in week 4 to the Buffalo Bills. And Spencer, leading up to the game for me at least, I thought the offense was going to be fine. And obviously the weather was a thing and I didn't take that into account for most of the week until I realized, oh, wow, this could be a real thing. And it was. But the defense, I wanted to see it from the defense. Could the defense stop Josh Allen? Could they neutralize Stephon Diggs? And look, for a Bills offense that is super explosive, they did hold them to 23 points. And I know the 17-point lead was blown in this game after the 21-point lead in week 2 against Miami. But what's your overall takeaway from how the defense played? I mean, do you blame them for this loss? Were they a reason why Baltimore was in this game? What's your overall takeaway?
I think that the Ravens defense played about as well as they could have. And they, like I said, had several instances of situational football that were really good. Interception happens in the fourth quarter, first play of the fourth quarter. Ravens defense forces a three and out. They got two huge stops in the red zone, which they had severely struggled to do over the first three games of the season. I think they were 8 of 11, allowing 8 touchdowns in when the opponents got into the red zone. I think one of them was a Marlon Humphrey interception. So to me, that says that you pretty much couldn't keep the other team out. You know, the pick was a bad decision by Mac Jones. I don't think that it was the Ravens did anything exceptionally well there. So this was a game where you see a team that does execute and does make teams pay in the red zone and has been a top dog. They held them under the NFL league average in scoring. If you would have told most bettors in all of the gambling scene, the Ravens will hold the Bills to 23 points. Who wins the game? You're probably, or yeah, 23 points. The Ravens probably win this game. People would have loved to take the Ravens in that situation. If you said the Ravens scored 20 points in the first half and the Bills only scored 23 points, what would most bettors say? The Ravens win this game. So I think the Ravens defense was great. Third down, not great. I think they were good. 4 for 11, they hold the Bills to. Got off the field quite a few times. Josh Allen just ran around like a big silly goose and hit them with like pump fakes 5 yards downfield. And to be honest, he looks like Cam Newton, man. It's a big, strong, fast, mobile, quick-witted guy who made them pay with his legs. And what did the Bills do to the Ravens defense? What can you say, wow, the Bills really hurt the Ravens doing X, Y, or Z? Like Josh Allen fumbled a snap and almost scored a touchdown because it just, you know, he picked the ball up off the ground and there was a gap because of it. So I don't think they really made the Ravens defense pay. They had a couple like 10-yard runs, 12-yard runs, some draws, things like that. But the Ravens kept everything in front of them. They played a lot of split safety looks and pressed. And Josh Allen eluded a lot of pressure, got away with an intentional grounding, gets gifted a roughing the passer call. Patrick Queen hit him 3 times. Adafi Oweh sacked him once and hit him once. Josh Allen just ran around like a big silly goose and made a couple plays and won the game. So I don't know that you can walk out of, if you're the Ravens defense, you don't walk out of this game saying, man, we messed up this or this, other than kind of, hey, we couldn't take Josh Allen down short of the you know, first down marker. I've watched Josh Allen hurdle Anthony Barr, and I've watched Josh Allen run over Bobby Wagner. He still is an underrated runner of the football. He's one of the most efficient runners of the football in NFL history. He's a top 5 runner of the football, efficiency-wise, in NFL history. So made some plays with his legs. I think the Ravens defense can walk out of this one. Are they mad and mad that Harbaugh didn't kick a field goal? Marcus Peters is pissed, things like that. But I think they should honestly be able to hang their hat on this performance. I thought it was a good performance. They got off the field several times. They kept the Ravens offense from kind of ruining the game several times, like that interception. If the Ravens would have allowed a touchdown to the Bills after the interception at the 50, the game could have gotten really ugly, a little bit quicker than things kind of went south. So at this point, we've seen the Ravens have, I'd say, 3 decent defensive performances against the Jets, the Patriots, and the Bills. And I know people hate saying this, and I hate when people say things like this, but aside from Marlon Humphrey going down in the fourth quarter of the Dolphins game, I think they've been a pretty solid unit. And I think this secondary is starting to really pick up their ability to play man, their ability to play zone, their ability to create turnovers, to not really allow explosive plays, save for when Marlon Humphrey went down. So I think as long as Marlon Humphrey and guys like Marcus Williams, Marcus Peters are on the football field, this is going to be a good defense. It's going to be a good secondary. And then, hey, they're going to get guys back like Tyus Bowser and Justin Houston. So if they can tread water injury-wise, don't have Oweh go down, don't have JPP go down, maybe you get David Ajabo back later in the year, then suddenly maybe you're talking about David Ajabo, Tyus Bowser, Justin Houston, JPP, and Odafe Oweh, plus Calais Campbell, Justin Madubuike, and Travis Jones and Broderick Washington. That's a formidable group of pass rushers that has some speed, some power, some youth, some veteran presence to it as well. So would love to still have Michael Pierce out there. You can't win them all. It's a shame he went down, but I think this defense is going to be quite all right and start surprising folks. Maybe not this upcoming week against the Bengals. I think that could be a tough matchup for them, depending on the injury report still. But I think in the next month or so, this defense is really going to start to look like a Ravens defense that people think of when they think Baltimore Ravens.
You know, I can't remember who tweeted it, But in terms of Josh Allen running, someone said, I can't believe how many people still fall for his little pump fake 5 yards past the line.
He got Marlon Humphrey. He got Patrick Queen. He got Josh Bynes. He got Odafe Owe. It was a you know, who's who of Ravens defenders did Josh Allen get with a pump fake?
And he is a very underrated runner of the football. I will definitely give him that. But Spence, you've mentioned some of these calls the referees had. Was not a great day for Jerome Boger and his crew, putting it pretty nicely there. I mean, you can blame refs for a lot of things. You can also say, well, you shouldn't have let yourself get in that situation. I think both are true. But, I mean, just how big were some of these calls? And, look, I know some of them were really big, especially on the defense. The Brandon Stevens roughing the passer. You have the non-called pick on the Isaiah McKenzie touchdown. But some of these calls, Spencer, just seemed like the Ravens could not catch a break. And as you put it, the Bills were getting home cooking in M&T Bank Stadium.
So if you're a baseball fan, you're on Twitter, there's a good shot you follow umpire scorecards, which it's a little easier in baseball to navigate a strike zone. But so what they do is say, you know, there's going to be robo umps soon in the sport, and there needs to be robo umps in football as well. Tennis is capable of showing within one half of a millimeter how close a ball was to hitting a line. Yet for some reason, still, we're unable to navigate, hey, did Lamar Jackson cross a first down marker? How is there not a chip in the ball? Well, I think it's, you know, I can go down a whole conspiracy theory wormhole. But when you go on umpire scorecards at ump scorecards on Twitter, you can see, for instance, on Sunday, 10-2, Mike Easterbrook, in the umpire of the Atlanta Braves against the New York Mets, had an overall call accuracy of the strike zone of 95%, 1% above average. And there was an overall favor of 0.1 runs for the Atlanta Braves. His consistency of calls was 94%. They list, here are the three most impactful calls. Bottom of the third, Bassett to Olsen, two outs, bases loaded, 0-0 count, strike is called a ball. Things like that. There needs to be some sort of accountability. If you take one of Brandon Stevens roughing the passer, one of DeMarcus Robinson getting pass interfered, one of six, seven calls in this game, one of Josh Allen intentionally grounds the ball, Calais Campbell has a conniption about it, which is pretty rare to see from Campbell at this point in his career. One thing can change this entire game. And it wasn't just one thing. It was a snowball time after time after time. Mark Andrews getting called on a very suspect. I mean, did Mark Andrews push off? Yes, he absolutely did. Did Dawson Knox push off five times in this game? What do tight ends do? They push off. That's why they're difficult to cover. So it just wasn't called on a fair plane. And I think if there was an umpire scorecard of this game for Jerome Boger and his crew, you're looking at 5, 7, 10 points worth of calls that impacted this game negatively for the Ravens. So I think that's why you don't feel as bad. But it does kind of piss you off because you think, the Bills are going to get those calls. Josh Allen can slap the ground and get those calls, and Lamar Jackson can't. And I think there's a much bigger issue of an overtone or an undertone, whatever you want to call it, of why that might be. But that's a story for another day.
You know, I think the Ravens did do enough to win the game if you take out maybe one or two of those. Now, obviously, again, you don't want to have yourself in that situation where you have to have the referees determine the game, but it was so much stacked on top of each other. You're like, how are they going to overcome this one? And then, all right, they did that, but then it's another one. How are they going to do that one? So, Spencer, I've been throwing the word blame around a lot here in the second segment. I mean, if you had to pick one thing, would the referees be what you blame this loss on? Is it the offense? It's not really the defense, in my opinion. But if you had to pick one or maybe even two things that you would blame this loss, is it luck? Do you blame the Bills just getting lucky in this?
Yes, I think I'm going to go with the latter. I think it is luck. I think you can describe all of those things as luck. Could the Ravens have? Yes. Could the refs? Yes. All of those things. But at the end of the day, that's kind of the beauty of the sport. And I'll tell you that the Buffalo Bills fan base and Locked On Buffalo or Locked On Bills probably is having a much better time than Locked On Ravens is right now. And that is the beauty of the sport of football. At the same time, let's get some freaking automation involved in things like first down markers, pylon markers. Josh Allen's knee is clearly down shy of the, and again, probably gets in, but why does that happen? I mean, I can go on a diatribe. I don't really feel like it and harping on it and being a sore loser and things like that, but it allows some sort of control for the NFL. And why do they need some sort of control? The only logical explanation is to alter outcomes. So, hey, I think that the Bills are the new America's team.
Yeah, it is difficult, especially when stuff does come down to what it came down to, if you're the Ravens. But one more thing, Spencer, before we head into our final break. Speaking of blame, I know some people were blaming Adafe Owe for what happened at the end of the game with Devin Singletary, where, you know, you see Marcus Williams kind of throw his arms out. Obviously, they're trying to let him into the end zone after the Ravens do have the Bills drive down the field and get close to the end zone at least. And you see a video posted by Jonah Schaefer, the Baltimore Sun. Calais Campbell also, you know, puts it out there as well of Owe does end up tackling Singletary, but he is clearly going for the punch out. And, you know, it was clear to me on the broadcast that he was, but seemed like it was communicated. And Owe did say that, hey, you know, in the huddle, we were told I had to let him go in or go for the punch out. And Owe moved that ball. He moved that ball. There's an angle that Jonas posted, if you haven't seen it, where the ball moves and Singletary almost fumbles the ball. So Owe was getting a lot of blame for it. And I don't what's your overall take on that, Spencer? Because it did look like after, you know, other reviews, Singletary was going down. It looked like the Bills did instruct him to go down right at the 2 or the 1. So what was that whole sequence for you?
Well, I think John Harbaugh summed it up well. We can go make our own analysis, and all we're doing at the in the end is guessing. And that's why, you know, I do appreciate what PFF does in some aspects. I do think that there are some fine points of trying to give a subjective grade. But if you don't know what the player was told to do by the freaking coach, then you don't know what the grade can be. How can you grade a test without the answers? So now we have the answer. John Harbaugh went up there and reiterated what Adafi Owe said. If the runner is starting to go down, try to punch the ball out. If the runner's not starting to go down, try and influence him into the end zone. So what do we see happen? Adafi Owe tries to go punch the ball out as he was told, and he almost did it. So I don't think there's really anything to talk about.
Yeah, it was that is the pure cherry on top of this game. When you're talking about the refs and the, you know, some poor execution on offense and everything that goes into it, Owe almost gave the Ravens the ball back with an opportunity to go there and win the game, or at least get overtime, because the Bills wouldn't have had that field goal. So coming up here in our final segment, we'll be diving into a bit of Jimmy Smith's Ravens career as he retired from the NFL yesterday, talking a bit about where the Ravens are through 1 month of the 2022 season and more. So don't go anywhere. We still have a ton to talk about here on Locked On Ravens. First, though, I do want to tell you a bit about Bet Online. And BetOnline.net is the number one source for football betting info this season. You can find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth articles. It has analysis on every game you can find. And as always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all your sports wagering information, with live betting up-to-the-minute scores for every sport out there. It's the fastest and easiest way to check out all your favorite games and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. Head to BetOnline.net or use a mobile device to learn more. BetOnline, where the game starts. We're back, rounding out our Taco Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher still talking here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, there was an announcement that was made by the Ravens yesterday that Jimmy Smith was going to retire, a member of the team. That did happen on Monday. And you have a player that played for 11 years in Baltimore, had a very illustrious career, was Super Bowl champion, underrated, I think, personally. I know injuries were a huge part of his career, wasn't able to stay on the field for the majority of it consistently. But when he was on the field, was, I think, one of the better players at his position. I mean, what do you remember most about Jimmy Smith and what he brought to Baltimore?
Well, I think John Harbaugh and Eric DeCosta said he epitomized what the Ravens want in cornerbacks. And he was dynamic against the run. He would never allow a receiver to kind of physically impose themselves against him. While A.J. Green did do some things to him at certain points in time, I think that you can't quite tell the story of the AFC North and the Ravens franchise and ultimately – the NFL's story without Jimmy Smith. And while he's not going to be a Hall of Famer, you know, I would assume he goes into the Ring of Honor, which is, you know, the Ravens Hall of Fame, but makes three consecutive plays. And everybody shares the final play of the Super Bowl, but they threw at him three straight times. And then past that, everyone's going to talk about that, like he said. But then you go think about the way he played against Antonio Brown, who was the apex predator of wide receivers in the NFL at the peak of Jimmy Smith's career. And anytime it was, is AB going to have a good day or day to not? Is Antonio Brown going to have a good day against the Ravens today? Well, is Jimmy Smith on the field? And if Jimmy Smith was on the field, then Antonio Brown did not have a good day. So I think Jimmy Smith was the embodiment of playing Ravens football, playing Ravens cornerback. Like he said, had some orange flags, some off the field issues, some sticky situations. Ravens kind of stuck with him and he rewarded them quite a few times, but it was just sad to see because someone who really could have been a Hall of Fame player, really could have been that guy, just couldn't stay healthy. So those are all the kind of first things. I don't want to knock him and say he couldn't stay healthy, but True. He said the same thing of himself. He had a lot of injuries. And what does John Harbaugh say at his press conference? I'll take Jimmy Smith at 80 or 90% over pretty much anybody at 100%. So Jimmy Smith was a preeminent, underrated cornerback in the NFL, helped win the Ravens a Super Bowl, and had a lot of shining moments, and was a Raven, I think, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, had the big interceptions and big moments. You see the two against the Browns in 2018 to help propel them to the playoffs that year, and Lamar Jackson's rookie year. I mean, he was a huge part of what they did, and a big part of those corner rotations that you saw throughout the course of his career, especially like a little later on with, like, you know, Smith and Brandon Carr and Marlon Humphrey, and then you had Smith and Marcus Peters and Humphrey as well. So he was a part of some really great secondaries, and he was a reason why those secondaries were so great overall. But I think, Spencer, there are always these early season overreactions when it comes to any NFL team, not just the Ravens, any NFL team. We're 1 month in. We have gone through 4 weeks. Baltimore stands at 2-2, which is okay. Right? The record is fine. You would have liked to see him at 3-1 or 4-0. I think they could have been there if just a couple things had gone differently. But you now have John Harbaugh announcing that Gus Edwards is going to begin practicing. Tyus Bowser, the ball's in his court, according to John Harbaugh. You have more reinforcements on the way. Obviously, can't forget about Ronnie Stanley and what his situation is right now. Baltimore has healthy talent on all three sides of the ball. So where are you in terms of what this team can be, what they have done so far, and just what situation they're in right now moving forward?
I think the Ravens are going to be a really good football team. And hey, I think they can maybe lose this Bengals game and get absolutely ripped apart by the Ravens fan base, the Twitter sphere, the national media, everything like that. But when you start talking about Ronnie Stanley coming back and Tyus Bowser coming back and Gus Edwards coming back and J.K. Dobbins coming back and Marcus Peters coming back, one of those guys probably won't stay healthy. And hey, injuries happen. It's a part of the game. And any player on the entire Ravens team could be injured. But if all of those guys come back and they get any relative normalcy of injuries, I think this team could still win a Super Bowl. I think the secondary is outstanding. I don't think there's some big gap between them and the Bills, or some big gap between them and the Chiefs or the Rams or the Eagles, maybe, I think, are my favorite team in the NFL right now. If I'm going to go place a live bet, I might put it on Philly. But ultimately, this is a really good football team. I think that people's expectations are very high of them relative to some other teams. They are 2-2. They do want to be 3-1. They could be 4-0. Yada, 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 horseshoes and hand grenades. But I think this team has every element possible. They have progressed their pass game. If they go acquire a pass catcher, a Robbie Anderson or a DJ Moore, or some sort of NFL starting caliber wide receiver, and Rashad Bateman comes back from whatever his injury is, and it is just a day-to-day injury and it's fine, then I think they're going to be in really good shape. And if they're going to make it to the dance, I think this is an 11, 12, 13 win team still. They have a really cupcake schedule the rest of the way. They play the Bengals twice, of course, and the Steelers and the Browns. They play the Bucs. They play the Jaguars. I mean, they play the Broncos. Are any of those teams really petrifying you right now? I don't think so. They play Tom Brady. Sure. But when you look around the quarterbacks that they're playing, they're not playing Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes and, you know, this kind of gauntlet of quarterbacks necessarily. So they've taken their lumps. Hopefully they learn their lessons. You know, people are sick and tired of hearing about 2019, but what happened in 2019, man? They had some issues. They got them sorted out. They had to cut some guys. They had to trade some guys, things like that. But I don't even think it's that serious for this Ravens team. They've been competitive in every game. They have led the vast majority of the four games they've played in. I think they've trailed for what, 50 snaps, 100, like at most. So this team is really good. Football Outsiders, the most predictive, I guess, entity thinks that they're a really good football team, and they don't have a hard schedule. So I think this is still a playoff team. I think this is a team that could still have a first round bye at this point in time. And watching the Bills game back really only reinforced that. So if you're adding a Ronnie Stanley back, if you're adding all these kind of guys back, Tyus Bowser, if Justin Houston can come back, all of those things, really good football team. They're going to be able to run the ball a lot better in the next couple of weeks and months than people realize. I think that's the major key there. J.K. Dobbins continuing to ramp up. If Gus Edwards is active again in the next 5-6 games and he has a ramp-up period of 2-4 games, going to be a really good team in November and December. So I think this team can still accomplish all of their aspirations. And I do not think there's any reason to really sound the alarms.
Yeah, I mean, we're still so early in the season where guys are getting either up to speed or on that ramp-up period like Peters or Dobbins or Stanley when it comes back, Edwards, et cetera. They're working with getting guys in, and I think, again, when we're talking in December, Spencer, I think that this team will be in the thick of the playoff race and in a secure spot unless, again, the injury gods decide that's not going to happen, which I hope that's not the case. But I also think you see the North hasn't been great this year. Like, you know, the no one is really striking fear in you in the North right now. You know, Cincinnati's won two straight games, but that's why I think this game is so important coming up in week five. But I do think you're right. Baltimore could still lose that game and be okay. But they just can't go 1-5 in the division like they did last year. You look around the rest of the AFC, Los Angeles, the Chargers are beat up health-wise. They lose Rashawn Slater and Joey Bosa's out. So what are they looking like? The Raiders, you know, Devontae Adams, that acquisition, I think they're still getting comfortable with it. The Colts are a team that is struggling. There are a lot of struggling teams trying to put pieces together in the AFC right now. So I think the Ravens are still very much okay, 100%. But finally, let's talk a bit about that Cincinnati game, Spencer. Week five, huge game, divisional, first divisional game, first primetime game for Baltimore on Sunday night. You have Joe Burrow coming to town with that trio of T. Higgins, Ja'Marr Chase, and Tyler Boyd. Eli Apple making an appearance in Baltimore as well. What do you think about that game and how it could go and how Baltimore matches up?
I think that early returns, I'm not sure of the injury reports, but I don't know. I could see the Ravens losing this game. It's a divisional game. The Bengals are built to play against the Ravens. I think the addition of Marcus Williams is massive to this matchup specifically, and maybe a decent chunk of why they really wanted to go get a guy like Williams. Marcus Peters also back playing in this game, who the Ravens didn't have last year. So when you're talking about Brandon Stevens being your number three, number four guy, Kyle Hamilton on the football field, if Justin Houston's able to play in this game, Jason Pierre-Paul has another week. Would be really fantastic if Houston could make an appearance. I think if Justin Houston plays in this game, then Ravens are in decent shape. I'm not going to go say that this is going to be a blowout win. Teams have really forced the Bengals to stink in cover two matchups, playing kind of split safety with their corners playing in the flats. The Bengals haven't really – Joe Burrow doesn't really have the arm strength to be able to kind of make teams pay in the hole between safeties and over linebackers. So he has to throw with a ton of anticipation. I believe he's – 20 of 33 with 260 yards, three picks, and has taken eight sacks and 34 dropbacks or something like that. Something along those lines. 20 of 26, whatever it is. I know he's taken eight sacks, thrown three picks, no touchdowns. I looked at it earlier today. But I digress. The Bengals are going to need to run the ball well, and their offensive line hasn't been good. They have to check the ball down a lot and run the football well and make their couple big plays after the catch with T. Higgins, things like that. So I think this is the Marlon Humphrey redemption game. Who do you think Marlon Humphrey's been thinking about all offseason? Ja'Marr Chase. So I think the Ravens at home on a Sunday night, a team that's pissed off. I think Ronnie Stanley absolutely plays in this game. He didn't have enough full participation practices to play yet. I think that's the only reason he wasn't on the field on Sunday. You trust Daniel Faalele. Then guess what? Maybe you're suddenly talking about maybe some offset jumbo kind of stuff. Putting Daniel Faalele and Ronnie Stanley on the football field. That sounds like a lot of fun with Morgan Moses as well. But why don't you go line Faalele and Stanley up next to each other and go run the ball at Trey Hendrickson and see how much fun he has. Maybe throw Pat Ricard in the mix. Maybe throw Nick Boyle in the mix a little bit there and put the ball in J.K. Dobbins and Lamar Jackson's hands. So I think this game could go either way. I think it's a close one. Bengals have been struggling. Their defense has been solid. They are a very consistent defense that executes well. So I don't think this game gets out of hand, but I think the Ravens have the little home field advantage, and I'm looking forward to a pissed off Ravens team and seeing how they respond.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very good overall game, and I know for the Bengals, DJ Reader is not going to be in this one, so that's a loss for them going in the interior, who's he's been playing lights out, so that'll be a big loss for them. But I think Baltimore, they've been thinking about it. I agree. I think Marlon Humphrey's been thinking about it. He talked at the Super Bowl media day about how he was asked about Ja'Marr Chase 25,000 times, so he's somebody who I think has been thinking about it. I think the Ravens could win this game, but I think it's going to be a good one for sure. But Spencer, I appreciate you hopping on with me. Thanks so much for taking the time, as always. What do you have going on over at Baltimore Beatdown?
Cooking up some new content, continuing. I'm got some things in the works that I'm excited to announce coming up here in the next couple weeks, hopefully. So continuing to work through film, post that on BaltimoreBeatdown.com, podcast, usually 2-3 times a week, Baltimore Beatdown podcast. Find it anywhere you get your podcast. Thank you so much for having me on, Kevin. Go give Kevin 5 stars, the man who gives you the best daily Ravens coverage. I do have to jump. Thank you so much, Kevin, and have a great rest of your evening.
Again, a big thank you to Spencer for hopping on, talking about that Bills game. And look, you can place blame in a lot of different areas, but the Ravens, if one or two things goes a different way, maybe we're talking about a win here. Maybe if one or two things goes different than the Miami game, we're talking about a bit of a different team record-wise, 3-1, 4-0. But the Ravens do lose 23-20. They have some stuff to work on, some stuff to clean up, absolutely. And that all starts as they prepare for the Cincinnati Bengals in Week 5. But that's all I have for you here today on Locked On Ravens. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to support the show, support the channel, be sure to subscribe, like this video on YouTube as well, and follow us along in audio form. When we get back here tomorrow, we're diving into more Ravens content, so be sure to stay tuned for that, and we will see you right back here tomorrow.